Okay, so good afternoon. So I first have to thank Philip because he gave actually a very nice introduction to what I'm going to say, because this is just one of the possible paths to move on. And I probably belong to the last line of Philip's slide, where you had the word-based translation and phrase-based and formal grammar. So this will be more about some of the linguistic approaches, even though this won't really talk about the rule-based versus statistical. I mean, the work we are doing can be actually done both ways. So when we talk about tree-based translations, I think the first question is what kind of trees, right? So I wanted to show what kind of trees we grow here in Prague, and I have an example of a sentence which was actually taken from the Varsity Journal corpus, which reads, according to his opinion, ULA's executives were misinformed about the financing of the original transaction. This is not a current sentence. This is 15 years old sentence, even though it kind of reminds the current financial whatever. Anyway, so this is from the 88 corpus. So the tree I will be talking about is a representation of what we call the meaning of the sentence. If you look closely, the sentence has actually many more words than you see notes in the tree, because the tree only represents the words which have some what we call meaning. So there are no function words, and I will show some more examples what we actually mean by this. On the other hand, there are some formal ways how to express the relations between the words. So we call these trees dependency trees, and the links between the nodes, the edges, represent the dependencies, and the green labels represent the names of the relations. So meaning in the sense, in the linguistic sense, I'm not talking about knowledge or content, I'm just talking about what we call meaning. It has several areas. Some of them are still pretty much language dependent. There are still words in the tree. There are no notions or concepts, as you might imagine if you use any ontology. And these words belong to the particular language for which this representation is used as the meaning representation. But there are also some things which are still language dependent, but not so much. So, for example, we believe that the relation between the words, between the words with meaning, are close to universal, even though not quite. So the tag set, the set of the labels that are used for denoting the relations between the words, it's about maybe 70, maybe 100 labels. I'm not claiming that we know exactly which ones, but they are pretty well applicable to several languages. And actually, we have tried that, and I will show that in a second. There are also some semantic features which are, of course, sometimes language dependent as well. There are some languages which do not have tenses or do not have plurals, but for other languages, these are quite common. So we still have to talk about singulars and plurals across many languages. We have to talk about tenses, modalities, and so on and so forth. Of course, these labels are formal, and they have nothing to do with inflection or auxiliary words. They are simply there as formal labels. And there are some things in the nodes of the trees or in the labels on the edges, which are truly language independent already. And one thing is just a simple thing, that it's a dependency tree. It has a tree shape, and that, again, we believe that can be applied to all languages in some form. The other thing which is there is the information structure of the sentence, and that's talks about the discourse and about the context in which the sentence was used. And this is also almost completely language independent. And of course, coreference. I mean, not all languages use pronouns the same way, but certainly the phenomenon of coreference is again common to all languages. So we have been working with this idea of trees for some time, and but of course this representation is kind of the highest, the most advanced representation of how you can interpret a sentence. So of course we are using several layers, and I will show we are using four of them and how they how they are connected. And this is the meaning representation is a combination of syntactic representation. These are still kind of syntactic relations, plus the semantic labels I just talked about. And of course, we have tried how we can apply this to other languages than just Czech. That's why I can have at least some claims about almost language independence or language independence, because we tried to a number of languages, either by doing it ourselves or just converting from other similar resources. Or there are actually other groups in the world who are using the same formalism for doing even a Latin tree bank, trying to use the same formalism and similar label sets. In our case, we are actually working with four layers when this meaning representation layer is only the topmost one. So, of course, at the beginning we have the word layer, when we simply have the words as they appear in the text. And I think we can find some representation even for languages which do not really use words like Japanese or Chinese. Then we have a level of morphology and lemmatization, where, of course, we use grammatical labels for the inflections and also use lemma as the normalized forms of words. But there is still no structure there. The next layer uses what's probably, when people talk about syntax, so this is closest to what you find in other representations for other languages. But in our case, it's a dependency syntax as opposed to a phrase-based syntax. But these two things are really pretty close to each other anyway. And then we have this last layer, which is the meaning representation layer. Now, these layers are interlinked not only at the level of sentences, which is our basic unit, but also at the level of nodes, which roughly correspond to the original words, even though some of them might be missing or some of them are inserted. And these links are very important if we want to try to write a machine-learned parser. Then, of course, it's much better if we have this manually introduced alignments instead of just trying to do some EM and do them automatically. And it's actually very useful for learning things like parsers and the deep parsers, and also for learning how to generate automatically from the meaning representation backwards to the real words in the sentence. Now, how all this applies to machine translation? So I just talk about trees, and these can be applied to languages, but now how we envision to use this in a translation. This is actually not just our vision. I mean, this vision was here for many, many years, even in the pre-statistical times, long time ago, when in the 70s, people thought that the only way to do translation, and actually I think it's still true, is to do some analysis on the source language side, then do the actual translation, and then do some generation on the output side. And I think the name of this scheme is after a person who was engaged in the machine translation in the 60s and 70s in Grenoble. That was Professor Volker. Even though this is not really a triangle, because no one is claiming that we can go all the way to the top of the triangle to use some ontology or interlingua or whatever you want to call it, it's actually a trapezoid, in fact, when we do some analysis and then do the transfer phase, when we actually do the translation between the two languages, and then there is some synthetic phase where we again generate the sentence in words. And of course, we can do it at various levels. We can do it, actually the transfer can be done right on the words, and then how the ELLIM statistical systems did it, right? We can do it at the level of morphology, and that's where also there is some progress when Philip talked about when you have an inflected language on the target side, and if you do some lemmatization, then there are better results than just do it on the words, and we got these numbers even for Czech. There are many systems that use some syntax, either on the source side or on the target side. And we just heard from Franz Josef that actually there is some progress in when translating from English to the SOV languages, that actually the syntactic analysis significantly helps on the source side. But what I'm proposing here actually is to go even one step further and to try to analyze the source language all the way to the tectogrammatical structure and then translate at that level. Now, of course, you might ask, this is a crazy idea, because instead of doing this surface type of parsing, where we have lots of quite successful tools. Now we have to do a lot of complicated deep parsing, then do the transfer, and then also do a lot of on the generation side. And actually, you are right. I mean, we didn't have a proof that this is going to work. But the idea is that the transfer phase will be much shorter or much closer together for the two languages involved than if we don't do these two phases. So again, it's just an idea, and it would look like this, that on the source side, we will have to still convert the dependency syntax to this partly syntactic, partly semantic representation, which we call the dectogrammatic representation, then do the transfer on this level, where we hope that the distance between the two trees, whatever you measure the distance with, will be small. Therefore, the transfer will be easily learnable from the data we have, will be not really one-to-one, but will be close. And then the generation step will not really screw up things that much, and we will really get good sentences on the target side. So here are two examples why we think it could work. This is a sentence which I don't know where it came from, but this is an Arabic to English example. And what you see on the slide is actually the surface syntactic representation in the form of dependency trees. And without even understanding, I'm not going to try to read it in Arabic. I'm not even trying to read it in English. But if you look at the trees, you see that the two trees are quite different. Just from the first side. I mean, the left one has the first head on the second layer all the way to the left, whereas in English, it's the fifth word in the sentence. There are different shapes of the trees on the right-hand side. The trees are not totally different, but they are quite different. Now, if you rewrite this in the form of the in the representation that we are using here, then actually the two trees are identical because we got rid of the auxiliary words that made the previous trees quite different. We also changed the order of the nodes to reflect the discourse structure, which then should be the same. And then, of course, we use the labeling, which reflects the functions of the words instead of using another set of function words or whatever the particular languages do use. I mean, of course, this sentence was chosen that it looks like, but actually, if you look in technical translations, it's very often the case that the two trees are quite close. So I will show another example in English and Czech, and that's kind of the original sentence I showed on the first slide. And if you really look at the word alignment, just on the word level, that's actually quite different. Of course, you can spot the name of the company, which aligns quite well. But then the word where, it actually crosses the alignment. So here we have the first case of a necessary word reordering. And then if you go on, then you find out that actually these two sentences are pretty difficult to translate because the reordering system would have to be very clever to get the correct ordering, not to speak about all the other issues that are reflected here. Now, if we build the surface syntactic trees, the same ones I used for the Arabic, the first slide, then again, it's better because they are close, but still they are not quite identical. I mean, you can see that the phrase, the financing of the original transaction, is actually quite a large tree in English, but it's a much smaller tree in Czech. Now again, if we convert this, or if we are able to transform this into the meaning representation, here is actually only one difference, and that's a lexical difference, where in English the word misinform is correctly translated to Czech as two words. And if you look at many translations, this is the most frequent source of differences between the two trees, just a lexical phrases which in one language have one or two words and have a different number of words in the other language. But these are actually not that difficult to handle. Usually the structure otherwise is quite similar. Of course, you don't you have to look at texts which actually do display this type of behavior, legal texts, technical texts. If you go into novels, then of course the picture changes dramatically. And I'm always telling a joke that when we were collecting our parallel corpus, that we had an agreement with Reader's Digest. And they just came to the country in the 90s, and they were translating these little booklets, the A6 booklets, and they also translated to Czech. And because they are quite expensive, so they were able to hire very good translators. And at one of the stories that we got into our parallel corpus, there was a story about a priest in his house on a little hill with a broken pipes, water pipes, and he was waiting for the plumber to come to repair them. And if you look at the translation, so the in one language, in English, it said that and this guy didn't show up. And so in English it read, "The priest waited in vain." And in Czech it said, "The plumber didn't make it to the hill." Now, of course, there is no way that a machine translation system can come up with such a great translation, even though for people it was pretty understandable and very, no one would stop and say there is anything wrong with the with the coherence of the text. But of course, we are not aiming at that. But in other texts, the correspondence between the trees is actually quite good on all the structural level, the lexical level, the functions, and the grammatical information. Now, just not to show these examples, we actually tried to apply this to a large corpus. So we took the Penn Tree Bank, which is a well-known corpus, already annotated at the surface syntactic layer, and we are building, almost done, with a parallel Czech to English tectogrammatical corpus, which will have those trees, those meaning representation trees, on both sides. So actually, on the Czech side, we have to do all the annotation. We actually had to do the translation of the Penn Tree Bank, which was by itself quite an enterprise. But on the English side, we can use the original annotation of the Penn Tree Bank and pre-process it to make it easier for the annotation on that level. So as an example, this is the famous first sentence of the Penn Tree Bank, actually a fragment of it. And if we first convert it to the surface dependency, which is kind of straightforward, there is no manual annotation necessary, just we need to do the head percolation on the English side. And then we can convert it, pre-convert it automatically to the style of the meaning representation trees. And then, of course, hand correct it afterwards. And that way, we are not quite yet there, but we should be there by the end of the year, to have the full million words of the Penn Tree Bank, both translated and annotated for these structures to be able to do all kinds of experiments with this data. So that's all I wanted to say. I hope it's going to work, because so far it doesn't show good results as opposed to the other styles of machine translation. But once we have the corpus, we hope we will be able to do lots of experiments on scale. So thank you for your attention. Okay, well, I agree that actually the experiments we have already done under the Euromatrix projects with the partial database built like this show that actually if you if you don't do it the right way, and that was what we did in the first experiments, was that it actually even dilutes the space even more than if you do the translation on words. But actually the correct usage is to break up the annotation into very specific factors, which will be then pretty dense represented in the corpus. So we hope that it won't be necessary to do additional annotation, which it looks like that a million words is not a big corpus. I mean, normally we need much larger corpora, but we hope that this will be like a seed corpus, not just for evaluations and training parsers and so on, but will be actually a seed corpus which we will be able to use on large parallel corpora for, let's say, Czech and English, where we will be able to use unsupervised methods for learning the correspondence of at least some of the features that are in this corpus. I mean, we know how much it costs. I mean, we have done it for the Czech tree bank originally, and it's a huge cost. Obviously, to do anything more than a million words, it's something that no one is going to fund. But I think that without applying the theory, even if you write grammars by hand for a given language, you still have to test it against something. And I think that doing this on million words actually gave us a pretty good insight, both linguistically and technically, into what is reasonable or what is not for the representation.